Hey, guys. Rich Outfield of the future here again. Sure is a shame about the panda. They were delicious while they lasted, though. So this is a continuation of the very long episode from last week that I believe I called Idea Man. Boy? And it was interesting trying to compile this because there were so many pieces that some of them were called, they had the same file name, and I had to determine which one came first. But anyway, episode is long enough. Let me be silent and go on with the show. Thank you. So now I'm at the cabin, in the cabin rather, trying to figure out what I ought to do. Let's see, I was here last month with my brother. We came to restain the deck. Then we did the exterior of the cabin, putting down like varnish and then a clear coat, I think it's called. There's one side of the cabin that gets the most sun, and we had to go over that again and again and again. I think I personally did 4 coats, and he probably did a coat or two as well. It was weird because it was so dried out by the sun and water or whatever that you'd put a coat on and immediately it would soak into the wood. And there'd be no evidence after 2 or 3 minutes that you had ever put a coat on. I don't know why I'm telling you this, but that seems to be the theme of this episode. Maybe it'll be called. I don't know why I'm telling you this. we came up and did it 3 times. We'd just come up early in the morning, and then we'd leave as the sun was starting to go down. You know, we didn't spend the night or anything. It would just be a single day that we spent here. And the last time I was here, so my brother puts these traps up around the cabin because there's vermin. Is that fair to say? There are rodents. There are these muskrat kind of things. He calls them rock chucks. I don't know what that is, whether that's just a woodchuck or something similar. But what they do is they come up here to the cabin and they go to the bathroom. Not marking their territory, but just...
Hey, guys, look. Somebody's built us this huge latrine. Be a shame for it to go to waste. Let's get to crapping.
These animals are large enough that they make a real mess. And so every single week, my brother would come up to do some work, or I don't know what he does up here. I don't come up with him socially. I just come up with him to help him work. But he'd come and it'd just be like all over the place, and he'd have to clean it up and scrape it, that sort of thing. And so he decided, okay, I'm going to invest in some traps. And so he bought these traps and he put them all around the cabin. And he's caught some stuff. I know he has. I've never seen him catch a rock chuck with them. Although last time I was here by myself, there was a little one. And I suppose that's what it was. It was fresh too. Must have just died. But anyway, the last time we were here to paint, he had caught a skunk. And I thought that it was a big skunk, because it was about the size of a cat. Not a huge cat, like a tabby cat or anything. But, you know, the cat that comes at your door. But he told me that that's a baby skunk. Gosh, do I regale you with the story? I guess I will. Because, you know, if you're a city person, maybe this is not something that you've experienced. If you were living in New Zealand, I would assume there are no skunks there. Just as there are no cats in America and the streets are paved with cheese. Anyway, the skunk was alive. And it was sort of huddled at the back of the trap. And my brother was just like, gosh, I'm not really sure what to do. Because look, if I approach the skunk, or approach the trap rather, the skunk might get spooked and it will spray. And then everything's going to smell. The cabin will smell. Even the interior of the cabin will smell. He says, maybe I could shoot it. Because my brother's one of those guys that always has a gun. But if I don't kill it instantly, it's going to spray. And even if I kill it instantly, it's just part of what skunks do. They will spray as they die. And he said, you know, the best thing to do would just be to leave it here and let the sun kill it. The sun beats down and in just a couple of hours, it will be dead. It dies of exposure, so it's not hostile, it doesn't spray. And then it started to rain. And so we realized, oh, well, this isn't going to work. Sun's not going to kill it now. And my uncle, the one that I talk about often that was raised Mennonite, was coming up the next day with his church group. Guess that's something that they do every summer. They come, they spend a couple of days at the cabin. I mean, that's cool. No problem. More power to him. But he just thought, you know, it's going to ruin their church get-together, their outing or whatever, if they get here and there's a dead skunk or a live skunk or it smells of skunk. And so we were trying to come up with a plan of what we could do. What we ended up doing was we got a bunch of cardboard that had gotten wet because of the rain, and we brought it out and put it as near to the trap as we dared get. And I was going to go out in the woods and dig a hole to bury the skunk in, but my brother said, you know, dig it about 2 feet deep, because that way nothing will unearth it to eat it, any of that stuff. It'll be gone. And so I tried digging in the woods, and it was just too hard. There were too many roots and rocks and all that. And so I had to come dig by the fire pit on the cabin's property, because all of that had been constructed. I don't know what you call it. Suffice it to say, the soil, the dirt around the camp area is soft and rock-free. And so I was able to dig 2 feet down. And but although it was difficult to dig that far, that's a big hole, bigger than I would have guessed. Bigger than I would have guessed. But you know what I mean? It's more work than I would have guessed to dig a 2 foot hole. Anyhow, my brother ended up sneaking behind the skunk, aiming his rifle and shooting the skunk. And his plan was to shoot it right in the back of the neck, I guess, which was supposed to destroy the spine, I think, and keep it from being able to spray. But it still smells unmistakably skunky. And we wrapped the trap up in the cardboard to soak up the juices. And we ended up burying the skunk in that hole that I had dug. You know, I got a really good look at it up close, and it didn't look unlike a cat. It was not an ugly animal at all. Yeah, and I thought, well, this has got to be full grown, because it's big. I mean, I know what babies are. You know, it was not a baby size, it was not a kitten size or anything like that. So we buried that, we covered it up. My brother had this idea of maybe putting cement dust, you know, the concrete mix, in the hole so that it would be more than just dirt covering it in case scavenger animals came around and wanted to get at that skunk. That's cool. He knows more about the outdoors than I do. And yeah, you know, if he said that that's a baby skunk, even though he thought it was a good size, then he was right. Turns out he was right. Because I got to the cabin just a few minutes ago, started bringing things in, and I went around back and I smelled skunk. And I was like, uh-oh. Different trap this time, not the same trap. But this one has an adult skunk in it. And it's really big. Like, I don't know, 2 feet long? Like, okay, you know, I was saying that the skunk wasn't as big as a tabby cat. Yeah, this is as big as a big cat or a small dog. And I was afraid that it might be alive, so I threw a stick at the trap to see if, you know, it would move. It didn't move. So, I mean, there's that. That's good. It's dead. But I'm going to have to bury it myself. And one thing that I didn't talk about in this lengthy story was that the smell was so strong. It's like, what are we going to do? And so we got tons of water. I filled up two buckets of, not buckets, barrels of water. And we poured those, the two of us dragged them together, poured those buckets all over the trap and the area where the animal had died. But you could still smell it. And later we could smell it like on our arms and our clothes, even though we hadn't been sprayed. It's just a powerful smell. My mom had this idea of vinegar would make the smell go away, or it would help me out here. What's the word I'm looking for? Cancel out. There's a word that means cancel out. That's what it would do to the smell of skunk. And so we poured tons of vinegar all over the trap and all over the pile, all over the cardboard. We ended up burning the cardboard. That's easily taken care of. But I don't look forward to doing this. It's something that I'm going to do, and then I'll tell you how it goes. How's that? Oh, guys, this is not going to make for a good podcast. I guess I should have known that 40 minutes ago. So I went out there. I looked for a place that looked diggable. I saw that there was a pickaxe and a shovel. So I took the pickaxe first just to, you know, drive it into the ground a little bit. Just to break up the ground, you know. It's funny because it's been raining, and so when I would pull the pickaxe out of the ground, it would throw dirt and mud all over, and it got in my hair and down my shirt, and I was just like, So I put the pickaxe down, and then I went and got a shovel, and I started to dig, and I got down almost a foot, not even a foot, I'm not going to exaggerate, and I couldn't dig any further. It was just too hard, and it turns out that there were a bunch of roots there, and so I got the pickaxe out, you know, heck, that's why I have it, right? And I broke up the roots, and boy, it was hard. I guess I'm not in shape. I mean, obviously, but still, while I was digging, I thought about how many movies have you seen where somebody sneaks into a cemetery at night and they dig up a body or they dig up a coffin, or in Pet Sematary where he goes out by himself and he digs a grave for his son, and then later he digs a grave for his wife. Oh, spoilers, sorry. I was trying to dig a 2-foot hole, and I'm exhausted. I started to come in. I was just like, okay, well, you know what I'm going to do is sit down for a minute. I'll record while I catch my breath, and then I'll go out and I'll finish the job. But just taking my shoes off, because the shoes were super muddy, I was just like, holy cow. I can't breathe. It just makes me think about all the movies we've seen, or books, where people dig a hole to bury a person in. On Person of Interest, there's a character named Fusco. He's Detective Fusco, and he started out really fat. He's slimmed down a little bit, but he's still hefty, ugly, pug, bulldog-faced looking guy. And yeah, there's an episode where he's sort of forced to kill a guy, and then he's sort of forced to bury the body in the woods. And he does it by himself, you know, at night. And then later, female cop comes and digs up that body and moves it by herself. And maybe these people are much stronger than me. And maybe when you have to, when it's a body or, you know, time is of the essence and all that stuff, you push yourself a little bit harder. You know, you have adrenaline and all that stuff. But still, I'm talking about like a 2-foot by 1-foot hole. And I might just take a nap here. Be one of those episodes where I'm talking like this. And then there's a kind of a pause while I'm talking. And then a minute later, I wake up again and I start talking, and then it happens again. Anyhow, while I was digging, I couldn't help but think about that, of all the times I've seen it, and then trying to come up with a story that I could be inspired by this incident with. And I mean, the most obvious is, you know, you're digging a hole and you come across a body. You're not the first person to dig in that spot. You know, you find a skull and you find clothes, you find a wallet. It's like, oh, holy cow, Marjorie's ex-husband didn't leave her. That's kind of a neat thing. I was also thinking of getting there's a little shed. It used to be the generator shed back before this had electricity. It has solar electricity here, which is great. I mean, although I've 3 or 4 more overcast rainy days and it won't be so great. But I was opening the shed, trying to figure out what the combination to the shed was, and, you know, to get a shovel. And I thought, you know, what if there was someone in the shed, someone locked in the shed, you know, and I inadvertently let them out, or you know, somebody being held prisoner in the shed, you know, like a woman or something, or what if there are bodies in the shed? You know, it's like somebody, serial killer lives around here or whatever. I remember Dean Kuntz wrote a story where this young man discovered that his big brother, who he idolized, was a serial killer. It was a really good story, actually. And so, you know, of course, I thought about that. No stories have filled my mind, although if any of those ideas could make for a good story. And, you know, okay, so I was going on and on and on about Ray Bradbury before. At the beginning of each episode, each mediocre episode of the Ray Bradbury Theater, they had this scene where 60-year-old Ray Bradbury is sitting in, I guess it's supposed to be his office. To me, it seemed quite clear that it was a set, but let's say that it was his office. Somebody with a steady cam comes in, follows him in, and it kind of goes. And his office is so full of oddities and antiquities and books and memorabilia and mementos and odd things from the past. And Ray Bradbury's voiceover says, you know, if I'm stuck for an idea, I just look around. What will it be today? You know, that's artifice. That's something that was written maybe by Ray Bradbury, maybe not. You know, I live amid that kind of squalor, only, you know, not organized like the set of Ray Bradbury's office. And I don't know. You have a creepy doll on the shelf. Okay, I guess that inspires you to write a story about a creepy doll, but then what? Maybe you do look around, and I'm looking around in this room and I see a, what do they call those things? A fire, a smoke alarm. I see a clock with a deer on it. I see an old cap that must have belonged to my dad. I see a bunch of sleeping bags. I see a mirror. I see a cooler for like drinks or food. I see a bureau with drawers. And there's a blanket on the wall, hung wrong, with a unicorn on it, a black unicorn rather than a white one. And it's hung on its side. So its feet are pointing to the right instead of pointing down. I had this idea of writing the five stories or coming up with five story ideas. Could any of these things inspire a story? Is that how creativity works? Or is that how creativity worked for Ray Bradbury? I don't know. All I know is that I've been sitting here for 10 minutes, lying here actually, for 10 minutes, and now I'm going to get up and commence work on disposal of giant stinking rodent. There's probably a story in this. I hope I can come up with one. We'll see. A few hours have passed, the sun is just going down. It's funny, it was, I went out there after I wheezed and huffed to you and dug down a little bit deeper. There were rocks and more roots. I did try and break them up with the pickaxe, but once the hole got deep enough, I couldn't swing the head of the pick into the hole anymore. I'd have to widen the hole, and I wasn't going to do that. I don't know. Maybe laziness won out. But I went over, I grabbed some gloves, just because. I don't know, I think that this will inspire a story of some sort. But, you know, I carried the trap, you know, a great big metal trap, around and over to where I dug the hole, and then I was trying to figure out how to get the trap open. Turns out it takes two hands to open it. And I was afraid of the dead skunk touching me. I don't know if that's a universal fear, if you roll your eyes hearing that, but I didn't want it to touch me. I didn't want it to touch my pant leg. I didn't want it to touch my bare arms. And it turned out that that was wise, because what I had to do was I opened the end of the trap, and then I lifted the trap in the air and dumped the skunk into the hole I had dug. And the skunk was crawling with fleas, just, you know, hundreds of them, And I don't know if that means that the skunk was infested with fleas to begin with, or if because it was a dead animal, it attracted all of this vermin. But that made me glad that I had been careful not to let it touch me. I quickly buried it. I got some big rocks and put them on top. And then I went over and dug a little bit more dirt to put over the rocks. Maybe I should have done the thing with the cement like my brother did, because this is such a bigger dead animal. And, you know, to be frank, the hole I dug was not as deep as the really good hole that I dug for the little one. We'll see. I don't know. I guess I wanted to be done with it. And this skunk smelled so much less terrible than the one that he shot, because I think this one died of exposure, just like my brother had suggested, you know, would be the best way to kill the little skunk. But I did smell the animal on the trap. I didn't bother to wash off the trap. I wonder if that's something I should have done. I don't know. It sounds like some members of my family are coming this weekend to the cabin, and so there will be one less thing for them to do. But after that, I sat down and I read for a few minutes, and I have to admit, I fell asleep. I was only for like 20 minutes or so, but that was sad, because it's already getting dark now, and, you know, there's only so much daylight. I wrote for a little while. I was transcribing from my notebook, trying to get 10,000 coffins ready to go, ready to publish. I haven't even thought of a cover for it. Boy, I hate the covers. I know it's a broken record on here, but I hate having to come up with cover art. And maybe on this one, I will go on to one of those sites where you can just buy art. See if I can find something that looks like a spacecraft or something that looks like a 24th century dildo. Something like that. It just can be my cover. I brought a DVD. There's this series. It's a cable series called The Americans, about some Soviet agents in the early 1980s that are posing as Americans, as just an American husband and wife. And for some reason, I just happened to have a disc of that when I came here the first time, and so I watched it. And then it's become a tradition. The last time I brought the next disc, and then this time I brought the third disc. So just, I enjoy doing that, and I don't watch that show elsewhere. I guess these are the things you can do when you don't have a life. But, you know, I've got a life in my imagination. And tomorrow I imagine, because I fell asleep this afternoon, that I will wake up early. Last time I was here, I set my alarm for like 8 in the morning, which to me is insanely early. And I woke up at like 5:15 or something like that. And I just couldn't go back to sleep. So I got my book and I read for 40 minutes to an hour, fell asleep again, and then woke up at like 7:15 and was just like, all right, I'll start my day. And I think that sort of thing is going to happen again tomorrow. So I'll hopefully get up with the sun and be able to go outside and walk around, maybe walk around the lake, keep thinking up story ideas, read some more, and do some writing. That's something that ostensibly I come up here to do, and how much have I done? Although I did jot down a couple ideas for these, you know, remember, 5-story ideas that I had to come up with. And I'll report to you how that goes at the end of this very long podcast. Okay, well, I'm driving away from the cabin. I mentioned my sister's panic attacks. You know, she becomes anxious. And I did wake up early, not as early as I thought, but well before my alarm. And I tried to accomplish something today. I edited a story, and I edited a Rish Outcast nearly all the way through. And that Rish Outcast will air long before this one does. But I sat there and I thought, okay, look, it's nearly afternoon and I haven't done any writing today. And my idea was, you know, the
you know, five stories. That idea I had of the 10,000 words and then I can leave. And I didn't do it. I sat and I wrote a little scene for a novella that's already done. I jotted down five ideas for five stories. The one that I talked about on the drive up was the most fleshed out. There was one that was, wasn't a drabble exactly, but it was that sort of a story where it's just like building toward a punchline. Kind of a nasty little punchline too, and who needs that? But I was just like, okay, you know, I can do it. I made myself some cereal, I ate some cereal, and I thought, you know, okay, well, I'm going to write until 1 o'clock, and then I'll leave at 1 o'clock. I saw, I don't know how you describe it, when sunlight hits a mirror on a vehicle and it's driving and you see the reflection of the light that moves on, I saw that and I was like, oh, did somebody just pull up here? And I looked and my brother's truck had pulled up. And I thought, oh, uh-oh, he's here. And so I went out and I talked to him and he said, oh, did you clean up my mess? He had been here a few days ago, and that skunk, he said it was the father skunk, not the mother skunk. It had been in the trap, and it had been alive, and he didn't dare go approach it. But what he had done was he'd gone and he dug a 3-foot hole. It was over where there's a deck on the back of the cabin, and where all the dirt that had been there, that got removed to build the deck, now was. And he said, yeah, oh, it was really easy to dig there. And I looked, and yeah, there's a 3-foot hole there, and I had missed it. And the sad thing is, yesterday, when I was looking around for a place to dig, I considered that area, but I thought that all that dirt was there for a reason. Like, they were going to build something there. They were going to build a deck. They were going to build a canopy or something like that, and I didn't want to bury a dead skunk over there. And so I had my struggles that I podcasted about for nothing. Plus, oh gosh, guys, my hole was nothing compared to my brother's hole, which also sounds like the punchline of a very bad drabble. My hole, I think I told you, you know, my intention was to dig 2 feet. And look, it wasn't 2 feet. It was just too hard. There was rocks. And the amount of times I hit that root, the big root that thwarted me, with the pickaxe, I've got one blister on my hands. I thought I would have several. But, oh, at one point I found gloves. So maybe that's why I don't have blisters. But my hole was pathetic, guys. I took a picture of the hole that I think I will be using as the episode art for this episode. And I think 3 of my holes could fit in my brother's hole. Again, I need to use a different word. But, you know, I buried the skunk and then I put rocks on top of the mound. And then I put more dirt on top of that. And today I was just worried that it wasn't enough, especially after seeing what my brother had intended for that skunk. And I asked him, I said, hey, did you come all the way down here just to get rid of that skunk? And he said, pretty much. And I was like, oh, shoot. And he says, oh, I thought you'd text me, let me know you were coming down. I would have said something. And I was like, oh, shoot. Well, I didn't, because I thought he was mad at everybody in the family. He sure didn't seem mad today. So he painted the shed where I said, oh, you know, what if there were people in there, locked in there? He painted that today, and that was his task. Anyway, I got to admit that once my brother was there, I felt funny about, I don't know. I didn't do any writing. I finished up 10 minutes of editing while he was painting. He came in, he wanted to talk, and so we talked. And I just started packing everything up because I knew after he had been talking for 20 minutes that I wasn't going to get any more work done. So I left. He had mentioned that my mom had talked about coming up this weekend to the cabin. She's never liked the couches that are there. And so she was going to haul off these couches and replace them. And so she would need people to help her lift the couches. And I thought, oh, well then maybe I have an excuse to come back and to do some more writing up here perhaps. That doesn't negate my failure of writing on this trip. It's funny that the first time that I did this, I got the most done. And yeah, I remember that trip. I thought, oh, why not just stay another day because I'm doing so well? And I didn't. But anyhow, I did come up with 5 ideas. It's interesting, the path my overactive imagination takes. Because as I've mentioned before, I often think, oh gosh, what if, you know, I came out of the bathroom and there was somebody standing there, or what if I looked over the window and there was a face looking in at me? But it's never Hell's Angels that are there. They're just like,
oh, well, you got a nice place.
Or, you know, a Latino gang that's just there to kill and take whatever they find. It's always something supernatural. It's always the boogeyman is standing there, or a vampire is standing there, you know, that kind of thing. I don't know why that is, but as that came to me last night, you know, it's like, okay, I open the door and there's a bald man with fish white skin standing at the door, and he's just been standing there waiting for me to open the door. I had to laugh. I had to sort of chuckle because it's like, yeah, vampires aren't real. Boogeymen aren't real. Yeah, it would be scary if that were to happen, but it's highly unlikely because those things don't exist. And I just laughed and thought about something else. But an idea that I had that was related to that was that a guy, and yeah, I was tempted for it to be an old man. I'm sorry, I like old men, which also comes out slightly inappropriately, doesn't it? But a guy who's a drunk or a drug addict goes up to some kind of cabin, someplace in the woods to dry out, someplace where there's no access to alcohol, and he has a hard time of it. But on, let's say, the second day or the third day, there comes a knock at the door in the middle of the night, and it's a little girl with fish white skin. It's a vampire. I was thinking, you know, that it's a vampire child, and she makes it known that she's a vampire, but that she's no threat to him. She's not there to harm him. She's just lonely and wonders if he wouldn't mind spending some time with her. And in the back of my mind, it was like, well, okay, this is one of those vampires that can't enter without being invited. And the guy is hurting so much that he's just like, well, fine. Yeah, no, you're invited. Come on in. I got to warn you, you know, if you're wanting to eat me, you might feel as bad as I feel right now, which isn't good. But she doesn't eat him. She comes in and just like she said, true to her word, she just wanted some company. She wanted a friendly face. I was thinking that maybe she's a vampire child and her maker, her parent, whatever you call it, has been staked or sunlighted or burned up or lightning or something like that. And she's not really sure what to do with herself. And so I just thought, well, that would kind of be an interesting idea, an unlikely friendship between a vampire and a drunk. And yeah, I mean, we could develop the guy and talk about all the things that he's lost because of his drinking. And she's lost everything that she has, too, because of an old English professor. Sorry. And they find comfort in one another. I don't know. there's something in that idea that I really like. So that was one of the five. I told you one of the other five. I told there was the one that was just a punchline, a sick punchline. I often say, and in fact, the episode of this show that I was editing today, I said in that, you know, if I were a real writer, it's kind of my Tevye song from Fiddler on the Roof, right? And you're expecting me to sing it, and why would I do that? It would sound really terrible, and I if I were a writer, yibbity-bity-bity-bity-bity-bity-dum. Everything I'd write, I'd quickly sell. If I were a writing man, I wouldn't have to podcast. Well, but see, I would want to. But yeah, I said that. You know, it's like if I were a real writer, I'd print out these five ideas. 1, 2, 3, 4. Really bad five. And I'd say, okay, you know what? In the new month, I'm going to write every single one of these. That's my goal. And maybe they're not going to be good, especially that one. But I'm going to do it as my goal. And then I just make myself do it. That's not outside the realm of possibility. Maybe I will. I don't know. I'll put a little note in the show notes and let you know if I did or not. I've always been a believer in the idea that writing something is good for its own sake. You know what I mean? I wrote that story. It doesn't matter if you never read it. It doesn't matter if I never sell a single copy. It doesn't matter if nobody likes it. I wrote it. I accomplished this thing. And I think part of that idea still dwells within me. So yes, that would be nice to get those five stories out of this trip. And if I end up coming back up here 48 hours from now, then hopefully they'd still be fresh in my mind and I'll bring my computer and work on them more. I'm reminded years ago when Big and I only communicated via email, he had mentioned the title of a Metallica song and said, you know, wouldn't that be a great story? It might have been The Thing That Should Not Be. Is there a Metallica song called that? If not, there should be, because that title is wonderful. And we emailed back and forth, and I said, well, yeah, definitely. And I know there are some other Metallica titles that are really evocative, and you could create a story based on that title. In fact, it might be fun if you and I put out a short story collection of stories that are inspired by the titles of Metallica, and we could include Call of Cthulhu in there. But what I did back then, and this was like 2004, 2005, I think, is I had Big send me a list of Metallica titles, and I jotted down like a little sentence or up to a paragraph on each one of what kind of story came to mind when I heard, you know, Ride the Lightning or Leper Messiah or, you know, Unforgiven. And I think I still have that document somewhere. Oh, I guess the point I was going to make, though, sadly, is that I never wrote any of those. That's as far as it went, is I gave him a sentence or a paragraph on each one, and they never went anywhere. But going back, if I were a real writer, I would say, oh, you know what? I'm going to look at that, and I'm going to turn some of those into stories. It's funny. Somebody emailed us just the other day. I guess I emailed Big, and he mentioned it to me, although he doesn't mention anything to me now. I'm recording this in late 2017, and Big is not around anymore. And I very rarely talk to him. It's kind of sad that, but, you know, life gets in the way, I guess. Our paths no longer cross. But Big mentioned to me that this guy sent us an email, and it had an idea that he had come up with for a book or for a story. I didn't read the idea. I don't know why I didn't. Oh, I never check the Doonstief email anymore. That's probably what it is. And Big told me that the idea was good, and he told the guy, hey, go ahead. That's really solid. If you need some encouragement, here it is. And the guy was like, oh, well, if you're encouraging me to write it, yeah, I'd probably get around to it 20 years from now. But I was sort of hoping that one of you guys would write it. And real writers, going back to the if I were a real writer idea, real writers get that stuff all the time. I've heard real writers talk about that people will approach them and say, I've got an idea that would make a great novel, and I'll give you the idea, and you write it, and we'll split the money 50-50. And real writers say, well, yeah, that's great. Keep your idea, develop it yourself, because I have my own ideas. I have tons of them, and a lot of them I just don't have time to write. And I don't have time to write somebody else's idea. I've heard different writers, not just Stephen King, say that. And that's the truth. It's like I had a list of, let's say it's 20 Metallica song titles and potential stories to go with them, and I never wrote a single one. So let me wax poetic one last time and say, if I were a real writer, then I would do that. I would write these 5 new stories, and I would look through the old Metallica idea stories, and I would say, okay, this one, I like this one. Yeah, this one has promise, and I would write that. And you'd be hearing about it. There'd be a Rish Outcast episode where I would say, hey guys, guess what this is? And the music at the very, very beginning would be that Metallica song. Not a bad idea, actually. If I could find just a tiny bit of ambition, I think I would do that. Anyhow, we have reached the end of this very belabored, long, rambling, silly, skunk-filled Rish Outcast. If I haven't said it today, let me say it today. Thank you for listening to my show. Thanks for being a friend or a fan or a supporter or a colleague or somebody that just listens to the show to feel better about themselves. Where they say, hey, at least I'm not that guy. Thank you. I have been Rish Outfield. You have been you. And don't forget that. Goodbye. The Rish Outcast is shite.
Special thanks to Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com for the music so inexpertly used in this episode. This podcast, amazingly enough, comes attached to a Creative Commons non-commercial, no derivatives 3.0 license. It's free to listen to, copy, share, and delete, especially that last one. But you cannot sell it or make claims on it yourself. However, there is a Patreon fund set up for this show, wherein you can donate $1 an episode and up to keep it going. Your Patreon pledge could very well save Rish Outfield. And who's going to come to save you, Junior?
Sorry, I'm turning around. I thought maybe I would go look at the lake for a second. I didn't do it because it was raining yesterday, and today it's nice. My car thermometer says 68 degrees. I thought I would just go look at the lake for a minute. Damn, this isn't anywhere even close to the water. What the hell? Give me just a moment, okay? There was water. There were lots of grasshoppers, nothing else. Still, I looked. Why not cut out all of that stuff where I say, ooh, I'm gonna pull off? Yeah. Why not cut out this whole episode?